And we're back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man Podcast, episode 361, with Mr. Dr. Gonzo, actually. Interesting guy that I had seen a comment on one of Graham Nolan's posts, actually. And I was like, hey, this guy seems pretty cool. Let me hit this guy up and talk to him. And then, you know, now we get to be in this position because if you guys don't know, when you're watching this episode specifically and you're listening to it on like any podcasting platform, this day, Wednesday, March 13th, 2024, I'll have probably done, by the end of the day, total of 6 one-on-ones. So, you know, it's an honor of Akira Toriyama passing away because, you know, after watching Dragon Ball Z for a good amount of my life, well, I've been around for nearly everything for that franchise regarding like maybe like the first series that I didn't see growing up. Watched it on the back on like replay when the episodes would air on like reruns, actually. You know, the characters have always talked about pushing forward and never giving up. So this is my remembrance of Akira Toriyama, basically pushing forward in ways that I don't think I've ever did before. I think a max I've ever did for shows one day was like, I think 5 shows. That was my max, but 6, I was like, man, I think I might be pushing here. And who knows? Might end up still having Comic Book Wednesdays later on with Professor Savage Dad. Post a review, Screecher 2. The indie comic book from Phoenix Press, actually. And who knows, I might play League later on tonight. You never know. So I might be pushing myself in ways that I never thought was even imaginable. But today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Gonzo. What's up, man? How are you doing?
Hey, pretty good. Never give up, never surrender, in the words of Tim Allen. Galaxy Quest. I'm old. I'm a baby boomer, so.
So how was your life growing up, actually?
It was really, really good. My parents actually bought me, I got this to show you, bought me my first 2 comics in like 1964-ish, mm-hmm. And I still have those. Let me show them to you just real quick. Original Blue Beetle, when it was in Charleston Comics.
Wow.
This was before Ted Kord. And I started out as a DC guy. I like DC and Marvel, but Black Hawk Comics. These are my first 2 ever that I've cherished over the years. Red Comics, I started drumming. My main gig has been drumming. Started drumming in high school in the 70s and went out on tour in 1979 with Gary Lewis and the Playboys. It's Jerry Lewis, the comedian's son. We were actually in a Jerry Lewis movie called Hardly Working. We were just a band in the background scene, but that was kind of cool. And through playing with Gary, I had a lot of one-offs because a lot of time the Playboys would be the band for whatever singer was there. So I got to play with Chuck Berry, got to play with the Coasters, Dennis Yost of the Classics 4, Mark Lindsay, bunch of guys, Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. So the Playboys would be the band for several cruise-in type of guests. So toured most of my life, settled down and got married, had 4 kids, and did a lot of studio work. I produced Alex Acuna, Abe Laborial, and Ramon Stagnaro, as well as Justo El Mario. We made, after 9/11, we made a CD for the troops overseas, which we gave out for free through the Blue Star Moms. And been doing a lot of stuff, became on the Christian end, and I don't judge anybody else, man. I don't. Became a Christian in 1994, February 13th. And just to be open, my mother and my children left me after a year about that. Enough of that bummer. But met a nice lady when I was recording in California. By name of Donna. She fed the poor out there, married her, was married 20 years and lost her to Alzheimer's last year on May 29th. I took care of my wife.
That's crazy.
I have no regrets. I took care of my wife in our home here until she passed. So, you know, I kept my vows. It was real, real hard. It was awful, but I was with her when she left this earth to go be with Jesus. And now I'm working a regular gig. Got to meet Chris Gore last year, which well, this year, actually, which was very, very cool, and became Twitter friends. You know how that is. You know how you network and all that. And started branching out into my YouTube channel. My YouTube channel is to appeal to the baby boomers. That's mine is Dr. Gonzo. And I play a lot of clips of old comedy things like Red Dwarf. What's the other? Blackadder. A lot of people have made the comments about, oh, that's Mr. Bean. But it shows, you know, and these days people need a laugh. And then I do a lot of interviews with my good buddy, Brett R. Smith. He does some coloring and work for Eric July. And Eric July is just stinking hitting it out of the park these days. That, you know, I work to keep a roof over my head. And the YouTube channel is for fun, but I still have a voice. I want to put out there unity, peace, love, all kind of great hippie stuff, you know, like that. So pleased to be on your channel. Love your intros. Hey, everybody out there, don't forget to like and subscribe to this man's channel.
Well, so let's start from, because you have three different histories, so to speak. So let's start with the drumming one. So I like, even when I grew up, the ways of getting music was like pretty hard. You would know, right? You have cassette players. There was those little square rectangular tapes. You had record players growing up. I like how I listened to music consistently was I had a CD player my mom bought me. We had to get like one thing a month. So my thing was like 1 month I sacrificed things just to get a CD player and buy like CDs on it from like my favorite artists at the time. Then I mean later on I grew up when you had like MP3 players and ways now you can download music, but I remember growing up and like listening to music, you only really listen to it like on the radio, right? It was like the only way to really listen to it. And how do you feel about music now? Because you said you're a drummer yourself, so like, you know, back then when you were growing up, when a new music video dropped and it was like in black and white, and it would be like killer oldies and all that other stuff, like people were excited, people were so happy to get something new, and it was so good, and the music just kind of like it spoke through your soul. Now there's not that level of enthusiasm anymore for music. It just kind of feels like people just treat it as like, oh, it's just music. Yeah, it's whatever. That's sad because it used to be super influential. Like, I remember when new things dropped, it would be so impactful as if, like, everyone's talking about it. They loved it. They enjoyed the feeling of something new. You know, even if you didn't get a music video, just hearing the song lyrics just was enough for you to make your day better. And I always say this, if you're in a bad mood for anyone, listen to one of your favorite songs. That'll put a smile on your face. That's what I always do. If I'm always sad, I'll put up one of my favorite music videos or songs, and they'll just put a smile on my face, just singing and just, you know, just thinking about that. So how do you feel about the music industry now, where like it's so hard to captivate people and make them interested in anything new music-wise? Because, you know, music at this point now is just treated as very disposable from just my point of view. That's why that's how I've seen it for like a long time, actually.
Right. Well, let me say, I have Spotify lists to go against my moods, you know.
If I'm
feeling down, I'll make a Spotify list to lift me up. If I want to be a little bit mellow, you know, have a bunch of love songs. The music today, I think it's too canned, you know. Taylor Swift in particular, hey, she's a great artist. Anybody that can tour that hard, put on a big show like that. I actually know her drummer. He's a session guy from Nashville. Great player. Very hard touring lady. I don't like her. I don't care for her music, but that doesn't mean I also have on my fourth history, I have a radio station, GonzoRadioPiqua.com, where I play whatever people want. So we will play Taylor Swift. As far as the new music goes, you know, since when did such Phil, and I'm no prude, but some of the stuff is just filthy strip pole dancer stuff, man. And that doesn't do anything for me. And have you noticed that when you see the movies, especially through Guardians of the Galaxy, they bought back a lot of old songs, you know?
I remember a lot. Yeah, a lot of people liked that movie, not just because it was actually pretty good. The soundtrack was put together was super, super good. Actually,
I think James Gunn's a pro at that. Well, we'll see if he is with DC or not. But anyway, Also, like on the last Ghostbusters movies, Ghostbusters Afterlife, they had the clapping song. You know, I've had people come up to me and say, hey, could you play that song that Gamora and Star-Lord dance to? Well, that's Coming Home by Sam Cooke. Most people wouldn't know Sam Cooke for anything, you know, but they knew the song and the scene that the song was set in. So I think what's happening is the music, the new music scene, beside artists aren't getting royalties like they used to, which is another whole bunny trail. I think that's why they're recycling all the good music during my day. I grew up listening to Tower of Power, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Funkadelic. You know,
you remember Steppenwolf, actually?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We actually did a gig with John Kay. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I remember Born to Be Wild, Magic Carpet Ride.
Creedence Clear Revival is a banger. That's such a great. Yeah. Like, I know people say they love the Temptations. Like, Temptations are old. Like, those songs they made are great. I love those songs, you know, but like all that music, those killer, in my area, they call them like the killer oldies. I'm pretty sure a lot of people know it. Like, Smokey Robinson is great. Yeah. You know,
he's still alive too.
That's crazy. I thought that guy was dead. Most of the people I think from that era, like I think mostly are gone. But it's like timeless music that you could play then, and then you could play it now, and it would still hit the same way. When you hear those songs, you're just like, I just feel good listening to that. You don't have that now. It's not the same level of feeling. It feels like a lot of this music now was just created for like just the kind of. What's the time period we're in now? It's not going to be like music that people go back and listen to and go, man, that was a great period of music.
You're absolutely right. And with the Temptations, you got like Ball of Confusion, which for sure represents our present time, you know, politics aside, you know, and you got Psychedelic Shack, which starts out with a, hey, wait a minute. You know, I mean, cool, fun stuff, you know, I remember one of the first concerts I saw. It was Earth, Wind, and Fire and Parliament Funkadelic. And Flashlight was used in Guardians of the Galaxy. And we got the funk, Take Off the Roof. You know, I mean, that's still relevant. They're still playing that on the dance floor. So where does this new music have a place in history? You know, I just don't think, like you said, I don't think it's going to be remembered in 10 years, let alone a year. You know, I can't even name that many new current artists because I'm not turned on by their music or their sound. You mentioned having record players. Well, have you noticed record players are making a comeback?
That's so odd. Yeah.
Well, here's the reason for that. Once the 80s, after the 80s, they really started into digital. It was very pristine. It was a great sound. But then people got tired of it and they wanted to go back to analog. And the only way you can get a good analog replay is through a record. I still have my old records, you know. And that's why I think a lot of the records are making a huge comeback, you know.
And I would say, what are some of your like favorite songs of all time, actually, that you could just like listen to and you just feel good?
I started drumming because I saw Phil Collins when he was still with Peter Gabriel in Genesis. So anything by Phil Collins, What Is Hit by Tower of Power is one of my main grooves. I love We Got the Funk just because it's a really cool, it's fun. Mm-hmm. It's a fun song. And I remember seeing Bootsy in those big sunglasses in a diaper, man. I mean, and Bootsy Collins used to play for James Brown, you know. So Get On Up by James Brown. I mean, I still like that stuff. I love the hair bands. You know, when MTV first came out, I was on the road with a cover band. We came back and flicked on the TV and saw these videos. We stayed up all night and just watched our favorite artist, you know. I love Hall & Oates. I mean, I'm all over the place. I also play jazz, so you know, I love Miles Davis's stuff, and I still actively play in a jazz band, and so I'm pretty much all over the space. Phil Collins wrote a lot of songs when he went through a divorce. So I can relate with some of that and the feelings behind the sense of loss and all that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But then you can listen to Susudio, you know, which is very, very uplifting dance song, you know? So, I love music. Country, a little bit, you know.
Country is one of those genres where you go, I like a few songs out of it, but the whole thing just doesn't appeal to me. Yeah.
And it's different than old country, because new country would be called Southern rock in the 70s, you know. I think Shania Twain, when she was with Mutt Lang, really kind of changed the genre up on that. I saw Brad Paisley. My daughter took me to that. He did a cover of Hot for Teacher by Van Halen live, and he killed it, man. It's so like,
were you ever signed to a record label, actually?
With Gary Lewis and the Playboys, we were signed to Liberty. We did one album that kind of just, I played with Gary late 70s, early 80s, and we played a bunch of new stuff. And with Gary Lewis, his big song was This Diamond Ring. They wanted the old stuff, you know, so it's really hard for those artists who were oldies artists to make a change into something new, you know. It's just because they're shoved in a box. Hey, Gary's still out there touring, and he's 80, I think. No, he's not 80, maybe. He's mid-70s.
Good Lord. You know? It reminds me of, like, the Kiss band. They're always on these farewell tours. It's like, how many farewell tours can you do? Where it's like, okay, this must be the final one, you know?
Well, and a lot of the bands will only have one or two original members. Like, when I played with the Coasters, Julie Akins was actually in that. And we played with Jewel separately, and then Jewel with the Coasters. So a lot of the bands touring right now are just like one guy, like Lou Gramm from Foreigner. He did his own, he's out touring. I think he's taking a break right now. But so you have, and then you have the Beach Boys. I did a gig on percussion with the Beach Boys. You have Mike Love's Beach Boys, and then you have the other Beach Boys, you know, because for some reason, guys hold grudges and can't get along and stuff like that. So Liberty was the only record label that I was signed to. When we did the album for the troops after 9/11, I did that in Los Angeles. And I wasn't signed to any label. Talked to a couple A&R people, but I wanted to do it my way because I wanted to give it away for free to the troops. And, you know, there's always this involved.
Because that's what I wanted to ask you, which was, I know a lot of people that have been to the music industry, when they get out, because, like, I talked to Jim, I think I talked to Joe that's been a part of it. They just don't want to be a part of the corporate machine, as you would say, when it comes to the music industry anymore, because it's super cutthroat. Where, like, back then, you can make money off of, like, selling, like your records, you know, via, like, big box retailers, like Walmart, Targets, Kmart's, when that was still a big thing, Toys R Us to some degree. Now, since people could just get your music digitally and potentially just pay you through Spotify, you can't make things through, like, all you got to do to make money is basically what going on tour, like you said, tours, there's like live concerts, and like how much money is it really involved in that? Because like your producers always take a cut of it. It's like at that point, you're like, why just do it myself then? Is that even worth it? You know?
Yeah. And since the studio situation has been so condensed, I mean, there was an Aerosmith album that they recorded each in their own homes. They were never together in a room like I would have been. So when you can make music on your own, they cut out the middleman and they sell stuff. They can sell through CD Baby, put it on Spotify. The sad thing is a lot of the people who duplicate and put stuff on YouTube, the artist doesn't get royalties from that. And dude, that's wrong. That's why guys, you'll notice all the old guys are touring because album sales are just down.
You know. They've been down for a long time. Actually, once it came to like that like MP3 iPod era of music, that killed CD
Napster sales.
When they figured out a way for you just to get music off the computer, just with like MP3 iPod Nanos, iPod Touches was really big for a little bit. that killed it, honestly. So now you can only make money doing tours, selling. Maybe you become big on Spotify. You sell your music that way. Because people got to understand, like you said, doing YouTube as well. Well, if that channel doesn't have 1,000 subs and they're not monetized, you also don't make money doing that either. You know, right. You're kind of just throwing out music, hoping it's going to get big, and then you're going to get subs because they like your music. What a crazy world it's come to with that. It's so odd. What a weird way the music industry has turned. Like you have musical award shows now. No one cares for them. No one gives. Everyone knows they're rigged. You know, it's like, what? That's so bad. How did it get this bad?
Oh, with DEI and woke and all those other problems, it's better to go out on tour and sell it at your merch table. That's what everybody's doing. And you can, you know, if you're a big draw and you can pack 5,000 people and you're selling a CD for $12, $9 to $12, you know, and you get half of that crowd to buy one CD, that's a nice little handful. Plus t-shirts, you know, I mean, t-shirt merch is huge. You know, that's why a lot on YouTube channels and the YouTube channels I support, if they have a t-shirt, man, I'm going to buy it to, you know, just to support their channel. You know, and I would encourage others, if you really support a YouTube channel, to like, subscribe, if you can become a member for special member perks, if they got good perks. FilmThread has great perks in particular.
Right. Great video that I remember. There's one of the channels that he takes a part of. I think it was called Film Courage or whatever. Those are videos that are not just only good for the time period they were made, but are good that are for, like, you know, many years to come. Great quality stuff there, you know?
Well, I mean, look at Chris Gork comes from Attack of the Show. It was cool meeting him because I used to watch him on TV when he was still kind of like a beatnik and with my sons, you know? So it was like, oh, that's cool. And there isn't anybody better out there right now that can tear apart a film, good or bad, than Chris Gore and Alan Ng. And I'm not being a shill for them. I'm just saying they know their stuff. Alan Ng, Ng the Merciless, knows animation. And he's taught me, through listening to his videos, taught me to look at things in a different way, you know.
So the other thing you brought up is the Christian thing. Because I know a lot of people have this kind of struggle as well. You said you became a Christian, and you said, what, like in
1994,
right?
February 13th, 4 o'clock.
It's crazy. 94, yeah. That's the year I was born. So, okay, I know this is what a good amount of people like to talk about when they talk about Christianity, is how do you keep intact your religion throughout your life? And despite, you know, there's going to be ups and downs. Everyone has ups and downs with everything. But how do you look at the people the way it is now? Because the way Christianity is looked at now is like, oh, well, you just judge everyone. There's all these misconceptions, all these perceived myths that don't even make sense. You have people that have never even read the Bible itself, saying things that have just never happened, things massively out of context. So I'll just ask for you, how do you navigate, like, you know, being religious now at this point?
Well, there was an old saying, I grew up Catholic, which is a little bit different than mainstream Christianity because of the gospel, you know, and I don't have nothing against Catholics, and I judge nobody's salvation. Number one, I don't, you know, at the end of it all, brother, they are not going to be standing in front of me. I'm not qualified. That's way above my pay grade. So that's kind of how I look at things now. When I first got into music, I played a lot in the TBN churches, which resulted in me writing a book called Pass the Plate and Let Us Pray, P-R-E-Y. So I had a very bad experience. And for a while, I fought against everything Christian. But now getting older and taking care of my wife to the end and just keeping my vows, I want to preach Christ. And if I have to use words, you know, let me lead by example. And I'm accountable for me. I'm not accountable for you, nobody else. Christians are their own worst enemies. You know, I've had people not want to talk to me because I don't read the King James Bible, or because I play drums, you know, or that I like boobies, you know, or that I'm not against the homosexual community. I'm not their judge either. You know, I've been in the entertainment, 67. So I've been in the entertainment world for over 50 years. There was all kind of gay people. It wasn't a big deal back in my
day. Yeah. And those gay people, those were like the ones where they would get called out now. Those gay people specifically are the ones who are like, oh, okay, I'm gay, but you know, that's you do you, I do me, but that's cool. They like their personality is not their sexuality, you know, correct. There's more to them. Yeah, like now it's all about, hey, I'm gay, so you have to respect me. It's like, I don't freaking know you. Like, who are you? You know, the people that you grew up with that were like them were more or less, as they call it in my day, in the closet. Those guys were just like people that there are more to them. They were awesome people, but they're just gay. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. These people now are just basically leveraging their sexuality as their entire personality. Like, that's just narcissistic. Like, I'm not trying to be around that. I'd rather be around a gay dude where it's like, oh yeah, I might like dudes, but you know, let's play and talk about a movie or something. Those gay people I want to hang out with, you know, those are cool people to me.
And let me give you a little hint and your audience a hint on how you deal with pronouns, because it just confuses the crap out of me. So I drove to California for Donna's celebration of life. Her family's in Modesto. Mm-hmm. I'm in Ohio. So we had two separate celebrations of life. Long story short, I go into this one hotel. I couldn't tell if the person that was going to wait on me was a guy or a girl. I couldn't. No disrespect, man. Mm-hmm. And I was tired. I just didn't want to fight. And the person was on the phone being really crappy with a customer and being real narcissistic. So, when I went up to that person, I did it like this. I said, "Hey, my name's Tim. What's yours?" And it was a guy. He said, "Oh, my name's Michael. Nice to meet you. Old school. I appreciate that. I got a 20% discount on my room. No fight, you know." So sometimes you can beat things by just saying, call each other by their names. You know, I have friends of every different color, but I don't say, here's my Hispanic friend, Polly. Here's my Black friend, Larry. You know, I mean, who talks like that?
Yeah, that was what they had called like a preferred pronouns. And I told people, like, when they use the word preferred, that means they are trying to coerce your brain into saying things they want, you know? It's their way of just controlling you. And it's like, no, this has not been a thing. No, I'd imagine no one really talks like that. It's all because the thing with that kind of thing, man, is they only kind of report that stuff in like big cities anyway. It's not like the average person is talking like right. that. You aren't going to go to no one in Nebraska who probably a farmer is talking like that. You know, it's just their messed up way of how they want us to like become and see the world. I don't know if you've ever seen the Alex Jones, Tucker Carlson interview.
Oh, where, yeah.
Where, like, it's pretty eye-opening that apparently he figured out to a certain extent that they kind of think we're, like, all defective and they want us to, like, not populate as much and not be what we are because we're considered, like, just outdated by, like, a lot of these people's, like, standards now in the industry. It's like, what the heck? How are people outdated? It's like things were running somewhat fine and then all of a sudden they turned to complete garbage and people were like, I don't like that. This is stupid. And then apparently that makes you the problem because you don't like the newer ways of things happening. And I'll say, like, people are not always receptive well to change, but this kind of change is like, this is not good. This is just bad.
You know, it's just reprogramming.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, this is not change that's going to matter in 10, 12 years. This is just stuff that they're trying to control your brain with. Like, they're trying to make it so we eat bugs. I don't want to eat bugs. That's not happening. I will never eat a bug ever. I'd rather legit starve to death and eat a bug in my life. I will be dead. I'm not doing that. That's just not going to happen. You know?
Absolutely. And just to follow up with the pronoun mm-hmm. story, at another hotel, I had a real bad experience with a person who insisted I use their pronouns. I said, I'm older. I don't understand that. I'm not going to do it. I just want a room. And he was insisting I use his pronouns. So I said, okay, then I want you to address me with my verbs and adjectives, which makes absolutely no sense. But the dude was into it. You know, he's like, oh, is that a thing now? You know, it's like the people that do this, I don't think they're really thinking through it. Now, I don't want to be addressed by my verbs or adjectives and that grammatically, that makes no sense. But either does your pronouns or pansexual or this sexual. LGBTQ plus M-I-C-K-Y-M-O-U-S-C, whatever, you know? I mean, why can't I? Morgan Freeman once said it on Black History Month with Mike Wallace, who did a really good interview with him. And he said, why don't I just call you Mike and you call me Morgan? You know, so that's the way we really need to get together. And that's a lot what my channel is about, saying, hey, man, I just want to call you by your name. Your personal life, your sexual life is none of my damn business. And you know what? I really don't want to hear about it, you know?
Oh, the other thing with comic books, as you said, so coming from comic books as when you first started reading them and liking them, because like you were around for like X-A Image, you were around from the comic book industry collapsed, you know, you were
Dark
around for
Horse,
like,
all that
Dark Horse. Thing. Good Lord. Dang. And it's crazy looking back at it now. Like I was thinking about last month it was like the Image Comics anniversary day was founded. Man, so comics have been through a lot. Let's just say that. And then I'll ask you this. What was the last comic book run you were like into as far as like Marvel and DC?
I'm rereading a lot of comics now. Let me find something to display for you. Okay, so as far as reading comics, I read the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh my god. That's crazy.
And so when the Guardians of the Galaxy movie came out, I'm like, what's a Ravager? Who's Star-Lord? You know, I mean, because I have my Guardians of the Galaxy comics from right off the bat. So my son, who's a big Spider-Man addict, turned me on to Bendis and Hickman. So I'm reading through the Jonathan Hickman Fantastic Four run, the Omnibus comic, right now. Bendis explained how the Guardians kind of came with Star-Lord, you know, and all that type of thing. So those were the last comics I really reread to kind of understand where it's at. To me, brother, the game changer was when Alpha Flight went gay. That was the first that I know of gay comic character. And Alpha Flight, not Alpha Flight, North Star, I think, was the one who went gay. And he was in Alpha Flight, the Canadian team with Puck and a lot of others. Well, he went gay, and they had a big wedding issue, and I'm thinking something's changing here. You know, something's gone wrong. I really didn't care, but they were really making an overly big deal about it, you know? So at that point, I started to draw back a little bit. Not that I dislike gay people, but I'm not into it in my comics, you know? And now it's, I think they shipwrecked themselves, which is great for indie comics, because indie comics are really on the rise, because the current comic book stuff is crap, man. It's not well written.
So for me, I buy every form of comic, every form. For the first part of my life, I've had very little. I had no actual physical DC comics. That didn't happen until much later in my life. But I knew what the characters were and everything. I knew the stories. I had to read it online. But I had Marvel encyclopedias for Spider-Man. I had a few Spider-Man comics growing up because my mom had a newspaper subscription where they would give it to us on Friday. So I mostly had manga growing up. You know, manga was my that's Japanese comics anyway. So my thing, it's like my background was a little flip compared to people. Like for anime, for like manga, most of that stuff, all that like religious sexual stuff, yeah, like this is what people don't understand. For manga and anime, that stuff can be apparent, but in a different way. It's not like beating you over the head with it. Certain worlds have political, like Gundam. If anyone's ever watched Gundam, that is a massive political aspect to it, but it's not in a way that is like insulting, beating you down, demeaning you any shape or form, right? There's plenty of animes that have politics in it. Someone gave me a comment on one of my YouTube videos that you saw. He was like, you don't think manga has politics? I was like, I've been reading manga longer than probably you've been alive. Yeah, I know they have politics. The problem here is what I mentioned in my video that people misunderstood, which was it's not an aspect of the story that is like, oh my God, they're making it such an apparent thing that they'll make you want to turn off reading the manga, you know? Because like with a lot of comics now, because I bought a floppy last night. I bought a few because I do my comic book calls, I do my reviews. It's not even the fact that people think they're woke. They're just not interesting or good. What you said right there. It's not that they're woke. That's just that, that it may be like one or two books would be that. Because Marvel releases a lot of titles weekly, right? There's like 10, 12 Marvel stuff coming out. A lot of it's not interesting or good. Like, there's a new Black Widow and Hawkeye comic coming out this week, today. It's like Black Widow's infested with a symbiote teaming up with Hawkeye. Like, who's interested in that? You know? There's a Miss Marvel's miniseries out. Who cares? There's gonna Next week, don't even get me going on Miss Marvel. Next week, man, if people don't know, I know there's a lot of boomers out there that probably start reading comics like the early 2000s. Mary Jane, Peter Parker's love.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah.
Jackpot. That's who she's a superhero now. She is gonna get a team up comic book next week with Black Cat. I love Black Cat. I'm a huge Black Cat fan. I love me some big old titties. But
yeah.
Who's interested in a story with Mary Jane and Black Cat? Why not just give me a Black Cat issue? It's like a lot of the decisions are not good. Dude, they just had a new... I know back when you first reading comics, this was a story called Gang War. All the gangs in New York City were fighting for Spider-Man. They just redid that in the comic books. They just redid that. It lasted 40-something issues. They just finished it. It's just... I don't understand why they can't make... The reason why the books aren't selling is because they're not appealing. You know,
if DEI is so good and woke is so good, why can't they make their own original stuff? All they're doing, in my opinion, is and brain cells. So all they're doing is taking our old stuff and ruining the crap out of it. Oh my gosh, Willow! I canceled my Disney subscription. Willow was a mess. You know, the plus. Disney Plus series, you know, so they're Indiana Jones. I mean, we're going on to movies, but they're doing the same things in comic books. But again, that opens up the door to stuff like Eric July stuff, stuff like anime, manga, you know, my kid's really into that. And he has a huge collection. Something.
Yeah, that's the thing that I also mentioned to a lot of people too, which is, you know, as you just mentioned, there are people around your age. You know, they're a lot more in the know now compared to what they used to be. And a lot of the parents growing up now, since it's more in a more of like a digital, physical age, so to speak, is people are much more in the know now. They watch a lot more YouTube. YouTube's more watched than any basic cable network, any, you know, thing of that nature. People see videos. So if people's entertainment is YouTube, and if they're trying to get their kids into comic books, and they constantly keep seeing videos of them blatantly shitting on the most popular characters, I think people know that these things exist. That's why people would not be buying. When someone knows that exists and it's bad, why would you get your grandkids a Spider-Man comic book? You don't even know, first of all, which Spider-Man they want, because the comic book store won't let you know that, because there's so many different iterations of it. You also wouldn't be able to tell, man, is this something that I really want them reading? Not like anything bad. It's like, is that not anything interesting they can want to go through? Like, imagine your kids have like allowances. Well, if they had $20, what are you gonna have them spend on? $5 on a 28-page floppy or $10 on a 160-page manga book? You know, I think people know the quality of the stories have massively dipped, and they just don't want to invest money into it. You know, because, you know, for me, a lot of people bring up a lot of great points. But I think the main underlying thing is people know this is a big problem, and they're just choosing with their wallet not to support it. Like with the Marvels recently. You saw the Marvels recently. That collapsed.
Oh, God, it sucked the rat, man.
Yeah, everyone kept saying, we hate Brie Larson. We don't like her. She's insufferable. We don't want to see no more movies based around her. Kevin Feige, I'll give you a Captain Marvel 2. Audience went, we're not watching that. People literally said, I don't want that. And they try to shove it down your throat. And people went, I'm not liking it. You know? So, I think that's good. I think it's good for the audience to know these things. And I think it's good for them not to support it. Because if they say they don't like it, don't support it. They'll stop making it. Because let's be honest here, they want to make money. If they don't make any money, they'll cancel it. I think that's something that they've shown to do over these last, you know, four or five years, actually. I mean, we had recently... the Suicide Squad game that just came out, that video game you probably heard about, the company basically saying it's a flat-out disappointment of how much it sold to people.
Well, I mean, Harley Quinn kills Batman, you know? Kevin.
Yeah.
And wasn't that Kevin Conroy's voice in that?
It was. This was, yeah.
Dude, who does that, man? That is the stupidest marketing move ever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to bring up as far as, like, Eric July's books, because I read all of them. I reviewed them. We just had Yaira that started was it Tuesday? Yeah, it was Tuesday, actually. Yeah,
March started. 11th, I think, or something.
Yeah, like that. Came out, $1 million. They had, you know, the four trophies. They had the $1 million campaigns all hitting, you know, $1 million, which is good for the company. And I think what a lot of people do, they don't understand, is like, that, you know how successful he would have to be to keep doing this? I mean, he's got some pretty big reach now that his campaigns keep to make $1 million at this point now, you know?
And you know what really bums me out? Is there are channels dedicated to hating on Eric, to hate on Nerd Roddick, not so much Film Thread. I don't think they get the hate as much, but
a few times. Chris Gore, when he would have to go out there and say, hey, don't like the one big one he had a few years ago, remember? It was 2022 when he said, make the MCU male again.
And oh, yeah.
Like trending on, it was like trending on Twitter for like.
I got the t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that tweet was trending for like at least almost a week. People were like, oh my God, how could this like straight white man say that about marginalized? Like, oh my. What the heck?
It's about good acting. Let me make a quick mention on the Marvels and MS Marvel. I never liked the comic. On the MS Marvel Disney Plus thing, the only thing I liked about that was that her powers weren't like Mr. Fantastic, not just a stretching. I think the crystallization thing was kind of cool looking in myself. But no, I think Iman Vellani is a sweet kid, but she just plays a sweet kid. I don't like her acting. I didn't like her acting in the Marvels. I don't like her acting in Ms. Marvel. I don't think she has that spark. To where you got Rachel Zegler running her mouth, you know, in the Snow White thing. But if you saw West Side Story, that chick can act and sing, you know. So, I mean, to me, it's all about is the movie entertaining to me? Is the comic book entertainment to me? Will I read it? I'm rereading all my old stuff. Man, like Killraven from Marvel Comics. Old stuff. That's still cool to read. I mean, I got piles. I have Ambush Bug, so I read a lot of the weird stuff. But, you know, it's all about, does it entertain me? Now, it's personal preference, you know, and what somebody else likes, hey, that's cool with me. But with Disney and all the Disney franchises, they're showing that people don't like it. And you know what? I think they're going to push on with the DEI stuff. I think all these things about, oh, they're going to change, you know, change course and all that. I don't think they're going to.
You've been around long enough to know, basically, as they would say with me, actions speak louder than words. Like, someone could say anything. I could say, hey, I'm going to change the way of how I eat things. Until you actually physically start doing it, none of that means anything. As I'm talking about right now, because I know a lot of this generation, they do this a lot. And it's something that young people do, which I actually admire, which is that hopeful, that blissful, hopeful optimism they have. Like, no, things can't get better if you just believe. That's not a bad way of looking at things. And I don't disagree with that. You guys got to understand, the problem here with that is you have to see physical action for those words to have meant anything. So I mean, you know, you guys are young. Growing up, okay, keep this in mind. This would be great advice for you guys growing up. When someone said something, actually keep them to their word. If they say they're going to do something and make their lives better and make things better, they need to actually physically do something to make it better. And I get it. Some people can just say it and do it. A lot of people just – this is another thing that I had to learn growing up too, which I want a lot of you guys younger to understand. Anyone could say anything. Some people just say some people just say stuff because it sounds good to say. They don't actually mean anything. So until you see any meaningful changes, don't just take someone for their word for it unless you legitimately trust them and know that person. It means nothing. All that matters is action. That's all that matters. Because with action, I can say, okay, they're changing stuff. I can see that, you know? But I can't say that when I've seen nothing changed. You know, Bob Iger's talked about change like the last 2-3 years. Yeah, because he came back in 2021. Nothing's changed, really. But I can't really blame him for that because those are things that technically he didn't really approve of when they had Bob Chapek. But I don't get why people keep doing that. It's like, yeah, I get what you're trying to say. I do. But until I see some, I'm old enough to be like, I got to see some actual like things changing for me to be like, we're going back to the next thing. And it's definitely looking like it's not going to happen. Have people seen all the DEI stuff you're talking about? This is terrible. The Sweet Baby Ink stuff is absolutely ridiculous. You know, like you had, well, probably the Stan Lee of manga and anime, Akira Toriyama passed away.
Oh yeah.
These people took an opportunity to be like, hey man, he was just such a racist to give us black racist characters, and it's like, it's just factually not true. Like, that's just not true in any capacity. And then the people are, this is what I hate about cowards. If you make those statements, even though they're just wrong and they're lies, at least don't lock down your replies like a little bitch. Just, you know, take those licks like a man. They protect their replies. They do the thing on Twitter where it's like, only if you follow this person, then you can reply or something like that. Such cowards.
Yeah.
Like, good God. I had more respect for you if you would just, you know, keep your account unlocked. Stick by what you said. You know?
Be real. They can't. Yeah.
Yeah, they can't. They can't
do it. No, they're a bunch of lying shits, man. I mean, yeah. That's the big problem. I mean, that's why I judge things for myself, and I encourage my audience, the baby boomers, once they can find YouTube and find it on their computer, that they judge for themselves. It's up to them. You know what I have, my kids are all in their thirties. I have 4, 2 boys, 2 girls, and I have a couple grandkids. I just think, what's it going to be like for them? What I'm going to give them old stuff, you know? And now even with the Disney stuff, there's all these cautions, and Mary Poppins used blackface because they had soot on them. I have never heard anything more absurd in my life. Is blackface wrong? Yeah, but that's not what Mary Poppins is doing. So they're just lying about that stuff. The problem is they're very comfortable lying. And I think they lie so much, they tend to, it warps their brain. It's just an opinion. It warps their brain to where they believe they're telling the truth.
Keon, I don't know if you watch him from Clownfish TV. He put out a tweet, I think it was yesterday, where he said, they want Disney without Walt. They want Tolkien without Tolkien. They want D&D without Gygax. I never played D&D, so sorry if I'm butchering that for everyone. They want Star Wars without Lucas. Technically, he sold it to Disney, so it's not... That one he self-inflicted on himself. They want Harry Potter without Rowling. They even want Minecraft without Notch. Yeah, it's like they want the popularity of these franchises without having the original people involved. Now, I get it. Tolkien, you can't really have technically involved because he's dead. But it's like you have the D&D. I'm not even part of D&D. I don't even care for the D&D that much. I thought it was just pure nerdy. I thought that was just the superest, nerdiest stuff. And I was like, I'm not a loser like that.
They want Halo without his helmet, you know?
Yeah.
What kind of move is that, you know?
Remember, guys, if you don't like it, you're the problem. It's not like we're the problem. It's like we're the ones that changed it to antagonize you. Yeah. You're the problem for not liking it. It's like, what is this world? I don't get it. How can the person that legitimately changed the thing get mad at people for not liking it? It's the same thing with Zack Snyder recently with the whole Batman comments, and he was so salty that people did not like his interpretation of Superman and Batman. And this is something that I've always said, which is, how can people think all the stuff we're getting now is not he was a problem of it too? I'm not saying he was the main issue, but for the same people to say things like, oh, our superhero characters aren't the way they are and they're not acting like they should be, meanwhile in the same vein be fans of that guy's superhero movies, which are literally not who those characters are. So he literally contributed to people not liking those characters. I just don't understand that. It's like, just blow my mind, dude. Like, a person who wants Batman to kill doesn't understand Batman, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah. And I actually kind of liked the Justice League, the long cut, for what it was. But my thing is, as an old guy, I liked it because they showed Granny Goodness, Darkseid, and Deceived. And I mean, I have those comics, man, from Jack Kirby from the 60s, you know, when those characters were first introduced, you know? So I was like, oh, dude, that's cool if they go that route, you know? But Batman doesn't kill. Superman doesn't kill. He doesn't twist somebody's neck, you know? It's revisionist history, man. And it's... Dude, it's happening in our schools. It's happening in everywhere, you know? So, I mean, what's the solution? The solution is to promote our indie artists. Again, this opens up for comics, movies, everything. If you have a good idea, work hard, break your balls, put some work into it, and it may happen and it may not. If not, just mm-hmm. keep on chugging ahead, because you never know when you're going to get that break, being in the right place at the right time, you know?
Mm. It's the I'm actually glad that, you know, Eric's been as big as he is, because it's made people, I guess you could say, somewhat passionate about doing certain things. I hope all this hating that they get inspires people to some degree to do your own thing. Because these guys always say, oh, this looks bad. This isn't good. All right. That might be your opinion. Whatever. Then you do it then. I would love to see people that, it's like the person who doesn't have a YouTube channel saying that they could always do it better than they do it. They completely just fall on their face. It's always the same thing. If you think it's this bad, I implore you, go do it yourself then.
Yeah. You know what us old guys say? Put up or shut up. You know? Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. And let me tell you the reason I like Eric's comics, because I'm a big fan of Taylor Sheridan. And I think in Isom in particular, there's that kind of groove there, you know, with the mm-hmm. rancher and the story and all that stuff. And actually, I would like to see more of the story in there. That's my only critique about Isom. I love the artwork. I got a friend who helps work on all that stuff. But I want to see more story, because I think Eric's a real interesting writer. So,
yeah, I think the biggest problem with the comics is I did a video covering what the comics can improve on. I think emotional impact on certain moments need to hit a bit harder, like in Isom 2. There should have been a lot more of there of like him quitting and showing, like, I guess you could say the day to days of like, well, if he sees a person getting mugged, it's like, is Isom really going to jump in? You know, I think those are things that the comics can improve on over time. But for the most part, as when they first just started, they're fine. You know, they can only get better over time. You know, I just don't see people. It's weird to see people comb through these books and they're not comic book fans. These are the same people that would say things like, these are the same people that are basically like only fans of like they would only know if the character existed through a movie type of fan. You know, which that these people wouldn't know a comic store if you hit them over the head with a phone book.
You're exactly right, man.
These are the same people that'll say things like, well, it happened in the comic books. Meanwhile, they couldn't even tell you what story that came from to even know that would even make logical sense to apply into the movie. Just, you know, just those to me aren't exactly fans. Those, what you would call, back in the day, we used to call them posers. Yeah, that's probably the best term for them. Mostly just what a poser is.
I
love hearing that. Oh, it happened in the comic books. Great. Tell me where that story is. Tell me exactly what that story is. Tell me the name of the story. Nothing. You'll get nothing, because they don't even know. They don't care. They're not even, like, I just find it crazy how fans like that who don't even like comics will hate on another person's comic and comb through it and not even understand the medium of comics and call that. The fact that people call these the worst comics ever is just ridiculous. I've read a good amount of them. I know really, really bad ones. These wouldn't even come close to that. They wouldn't even scratch top 10, actually. Top 10 worst comics ever. And that's crazy. Is if people think that Eric's comics are so bad, like you said before, why don't you take your money and go support other indie titles that you think are better than? Those people would definitely use the money, you know? But they don't. Because they're just faking it. They don't actually like comics. They're just hating for the sake of hating. I don't think it's anything genuine. It's, hey, this person is more successful. And then, you know, that means I must not like them, because that's how envy works.
Yeah. And the big problem with that's why some of these YouTube channels that just focus on hating a certain other YouTube channel, those are true posers. I mean, they wouldn't have an original idea if it stood in front of them and it had a name tag, original idea in front of it, you know? So they have to riff off of other people's stuff, you know? And they don't have, and Hollywood, this whole generation is kind of like that. It's sad to say, because look at Hollywood now, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. It's doing the same thing. Oh my gosh, I've been watching Shogun on Hulu.
Heard that's pretty good.
It's really good. I read the James Cavell book, and I saw the original series with Richard Chamberlain, man, dude. So, I mean, it's good. It's really, really good. It's pretty damn brutal, too. But they stick really close to the book. But even if you don't stick close to the source material, let me see if I have a example here real quick. If I have a... have downtime, but
it's okay. No worries.
One of my old, and I got piles of comics, man.
Good Lord. Yeah, I know how you feel. Good Lord. Those things just be piling up. You put like a stack on top of a stack. I'm like, I probably should get a box for these, actually.
I got boxes. I take about three. Okay, so let's use an example. Here's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, my God. That's the first one.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
So that's old school. Okay, so I go to the movie. Again, my first response is, what the hell did they do to Yondu? I love Michael Rooker as an actor, but I gave the movie a chance. And you know what? The movie on its own was good. It was more focused on the Bendis run, which I was not familiar with. But yeah, Yondu didn't look like my action figure. A badass, you know? So, but the movie was good. The first Guardians of the Galaxy was good. And they, so they made a good movie. It wasn't quite what I wanted. The ending, it showed all the different guys, Starhawk, you know, which was Sylvester Stallone, and all the original characters, but they were Ravagers, didn't understand that. But it stood on its own. It was a good movie. I was entertained. That's all I want. When I go to the movies or read a comic, don't you just want to escape? I just want to escape reality just for a little bit. Not that I don't deal with stuff every single day. You know what I mean? But I want, we play games. We read comics. We go to movies to be entertained, not to be preached to. I don't want to be preached to. Not politically. Whoever you vote for, hey, that's great. I don't care. You know? But I don't want to be preached to constantly, you know, I mean, and be beat over the head by somebody else's agenda who doesn't have an original thought in his body. So
coming up with a DC, like you mentioned earlier with Superman, DC, you know, they've been through a lot of ups and downs, more downs than ups, I would say, at least live action wise. Do you have any hopes for this Superman movie coming out next year, actually?
I think the casting was really good. I watched The Incredible Mrs. Maisel. I think I forget the actress's name, but that's a perfect Lois Lane. I like all the casting. They have Jimmy Olsen, looks like Jimmy Olsen. I do have hope for that, you know, but we'll have to see. You know, I mean, I really don't know. You know what I do like? What they did in the past was stuff like this. You ever seen these?
Oh, wow. I can see. Yeah. The amalgam. Oh, they're going to put that in two omnibuses coming up in August, actually.
Yeah. I own all the originals, you know, like Bruce Wayne.
So you have the Daredevil Batman one. You have the Dark Claw one. You have the one with Superman and Spider-Man, right?
Yep. Iron Lantern, Bruce Wayne, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Huh, that's cool.
So, contractually, could they ever do that? No, probably not. But James Gunn, I don't know, he's a weird egg, man. I like his movies pretty much, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a hard thing because, like, I liked Guardians 1. I thought Guardians 2 was a little bit weaker than the first one. I haven't seen the third one. I watched the Suicide Squad he did. I really liked that one. I saw Peacemaker. I liked that. So it's not like, but these are different DC. Like the DC characters that he had a chance to handle, he handled them in like more of the raunchy villain way, which is kind of what those characters are. They're like raunchy, you know, like I would say it's like villainous characters where that's their personality. Their personality is supposed to be like villains, and he handled that, I think, pretty well. The issue here is those characters have a distinct personality difference between that and Superman. And that there's such a massive difference between handling someone like Harley Quinn compared to Superman, you know?
You're right. You're right. And here's the deal. I think he's really good with the oddball characters. So
yeah,
Creature Commandos should maybe be pretty good. I liked Peacemaker because I have Peacemaker number one, and they put in Vigilante in that. I have Vigilante number one, man. I like that character, but I was reading Doom Patrol, Challengers of the Unknown, Black Hawk, all the weird off DC things. Can he take a prime character and make it good? We'll see. We'll see. I think it's, so far his casting is good. I don't like the one comic where they have the, like the gay Batman and Superman. It was a comic I had to look up because I wasn't even familiar with it. And the name escapes me right now.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's going to make a movie on that. That's in the queue. So
my biggest problem with it so far is the writers he's announced for it. Christina Hodson did Birds of Prey and The Flash. Those are not good movies. And I love Barry Allen. He's my favorite Flash. And that was just pure awful. Birds of Prey, that's not even a movie. That was made out of a backyard. And then Tom King, I haven't read that much of the guy's work, I'll be honest here. But from what I've gathered from what like the word of mouth around this guy is he's not good and he directly butchers characters. So I don't know if James Gunn is making his good like opening campaign of like this shared DC universe when he's got Christina Hodson, who probably can't write a movie to save her life, and he's got Tom King, who would arguably say a Zack Snyder of comic book writers. That's
I would agree with that.
I mean, unless he's sitting there going like, hey, I don't want none of that nonsense here. This stuff has to be this, and this way. And if he can get them around to his vision, I think that's good. But if he can't, people don't like, guys, I'm telling you right now, people do not like Tom King from any comic book writing for the most part. There's always gonna be those oddball eggs that like him. That just happens. But for the most part, he is basically what you think about as Zack Snyder, okay? So I swear, if he's ever writing a Batman movie, I might have to get a rope and just jump, because I don't know if I can stomach that.
Well, and is James Gunn going to bend the knee? That's what I want to know.
He did give us a ginger-haired Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah. You know? No, I thought that was cool. Yeah.
His casting has been pretty on point.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I think it's
the
very
only
good.
Thing that I know people pointed out the Perry White thing because it's a black guy playing Perry White. I would have to attribute that to say DEI. DEI literally forces you to cast a person. Right. You have to have a black guy or a Mexican or whatever in your movie. You know, yeah. I guess they're sitting there going like, well, Perry White's not a popular enough character. It's like, that sucks. That's such that even if you're having all that slam dunk casting, you can't keep it like even race accurate because of just a company that forces you to just play by this like freaking race rules. Like, that's ridiculous.
Well, look at Donner and using Jackie Cooper in the first Superman movie. I thought Jackie Cooper was a great Perry White, mm-hmm. you know, old school actor. So, you know, sometimes race swap bugs me. I didn't mind Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. I didn't have to fill out a butthurt report or nothing like that, you know. But then they made Nick Fury into a pussy, you know. I mean, can I just say that? You know, Secret Invasion, you know, so is James.
I actually love that story. That Secret Invasion story is really good. I can't believe I heard the thing. Cause like I stepped out of
the are you talking about the series? The I love comic. The comic. I the own comic. The comic.
Really good. Yeah. That story is great. I love that story. It's that's cause I, around that time, that was the first show I didn't watch from them. I had checked out She-Hulk episode 6 is when I officially went, I'm done with these. Because, like, I just couldn't believe in my head that they were going to actually do a story based around Secret Invasion, like what I've read, at least to a point where it's, like, 80-20. You know, I'll take 80-20 for going, like, comic adaptation.
Sure, yeah.
People have to understand, this is the reason why I didn't like them killing off Iron Man. Iron Man, as a character, despite what people may think about him, and I like Tony Stark, I like Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man. Iron Man is a part of a lot of really, really great stories in Marvel comic books, okay? Is a part of the Illuminati in that story with Black Bolt. Okay, people, so they can't even blow my mind, dude. You can't do Secret Invasion even just off like premise because you don't even have like a main group of part of the story. It's like like you said earlier, they just only put out these products for the name alone. The name alone, the people are thinking, this will be like the comic book. No, they're lying to you. This just is nothing like the stories. That's why I was going to be bait and switched. And tricked by these people. I knew they weren't going to do something like that with a story. That's a thing. You can't even do that in the show. That's a full-scale movie you're doing there with that story there. You know?
Oh, yeah. And look at all leave me hanging things. They introduce Star Fox and Pip at the end of Eternals. They should have been in Infinity Gauntlet. Pip should have been by Gamora's side. You know, I mean, he's a great character, but then they show him in the tail end of a post-credit scene. Look at She-Hulk was such a disaster. God, it was so nasty.
God, it was a terrible show. What a terrible show.
And look at the John Byrne run with She-Hulk. It was great. It was a great comic, you know?
Because like, remember I told you I had to kind of read these characters like online and learn and go to like YouTube videos to see like there's some of the stories. My favorite one that people talked about was the one where it's Fantastic Four, where she's with them and it's revealed that she actually likes being being She-Hulk more than her original self. And I feel like that was so cool for the character because that would make her distinctively different from Bruce, actually. Bruce doesn't really like being the Hulk. He actually has a very big problem with the Hulk. She likes her Hulk side. That, like I said, I know a lot of people brought up, well, there's always a female character to a male character. But the thing back then, guys, was you had a female version of Superman, like Supergirl. But she's totally different from him. She's not even the same. It's like in concept alone, yeah, they're kind of just a female version. If we're going off just like surface level. But in like... If you dig through it, She-Hulk's nothing like Bruce, or say, you know, her name is, for Natasha, I'm pretty sure that's her name, or She-Hulk's name, her real name, I forgot, I play that name sometimes, Jennifer, her name's Jennifer.
Yeah.
Jennifer's not like Bruce, Kara's not like Clark, there's the reason why, that's what you said back then, they had talent. Now, they just kind of want the females to be exactly like the male characters while not simultaneously understanding there's a reason why people like them as different characters to begin with. And
what really pisses me off is they'll bring in some cool stuff. Multiverse of Madness. Perfect example. They bring in Illuminati. Cool as hell. I mean, and then they kill them all off. John Krasinski, the perfect Reed Richards, smokes Pedro Pascal. That's a really bad. And I have nothing against Hispanic people, but that's just, to me, that sucks. But you got John Krasinski and Wanda turns him into a blue plate special, you know? They have Professor X in the chair. He gets his neck broken. So you introduce the Illuminati. Namor wasn't there, but, you know, and then they kill them all off, you know? I mean, it's like, I don't get it. I just don't understand. You know,
a few other things I want to ask you before we head out, which is given, and you've been around since Daredevil was the thing, obviously.
I love Daredevil.
People forget his first suit. He's not red. His first suit's the yellow one. And you know how the Daredevil Born Again stuff, they had that. That was a complete disaster. Do you have any hope that that's going to be good? There's no way.
I dumped my subscription with Disney. I will get it back just to watch that. I love the Netflix series. I thought that was good. Is it going to be good? I like them bringing in Bullseye, I guess. Is Foggy and Karen going to survive? I don't know. I think that's a good move if they have them in there and don't kill them off in the first two stories. I don't know. I really don't know. Because at this point, I have no hope for Disney. Because as much as they say they're going to backpedal on the DEI stuff, I don't believe them. I don't believe them. So, yeah, I'm going to watch it. But do I have hope for it? Well, I guess we'll see, you know.
And the thing with – because you, I forgot. You also have your own YouTube channel as well. What do you do on there for people that, you know, may want to check you out?
Dr. Gonzo. And I on my shorts, I have funny clips because you got to give people a laugh today. And yeah, they're clips from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, from Red Dwarf, all that kind of stuff. My interviews, I do a little bit of drum stuff because obviously I have drums. And I do a lot of interviews with Brett R. Smith, who's a wonderful commercial artist. He's did some stuff with Eric July and Marvel and DC. And we do interviews that are very engaging. We talk about the gayness in Marvel, but without putting down gays. I interview comics like Brian Swinehart, other people's, because I do a little bit of, I introduce a lot of stuff at a local comedy club. I'm not a comedian. I'm just a smart ass. But so Dr. Gonzo is about baby boomer stuff, but it's good for everybody. I want everybody to just chill. I did a review of Song of the South. That's pinned to my thing because I have an actual copy of Song of the South. You can still get, and I show where that movie is not racist. You know, it's not. I would encourage you as well and everybody out there to check out my review of Song of the South. It was a beautiful movie about people getting together of all colors, you know. So, but Disney's banned it. China hasn't. You can get them. You can get those DVDs from the Chinese. And so I do a lot of interviews and stuff about that. And I have my radio channel, GonzaRadioPiqua.com. It's the radio station that listens to you. We play what people want. So it's a very multi-genre type of thing on the internet. So that's me in a nutshell and probably where I belong too.
Mm. And the last thing I'll ask is, the other thing before that, which is, got any big plans for your YouTube channel coming up this year, actually? Or are you just going to be doing the same thing?
I'm going to try to get a hold of some old friends. I'd like to interview Chuck. I've interviewed Chuck Norris before, John Anderson from Yes. I want to do some bigger interviews. I'm trying to get a hold of Jason Stamen. We'll see if that happens. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of celebrity friends. If I can get them on live, it may be interesting for people because of me playing with Jerry Lewis, the comedian's son. Check it out. If you like it, that's great. Like and subscribe. I don't monetize my channel because I don't have enough subscribers yet, but I'm growing it like we were taught in my day. You just stay persistent and keep on keeping on, you know. So, and I would encourage the people, if they like the content here, to like and subscribe, as well as your YouTube channel is really good too. So,
and last thing I ask is any shout outs you want to give to anyone in particular and anything else you want to say before we head out?
Thank you for having me on the program. That's very generous of you. Give a shout out to the YouTubers I love, of course, the guys at Film Threat, Glenn, Chris, Alan the Merciless, Miss P Coffee, my friend Brett R. Smith, who also is in Bounding Into Comics. That's a pretty good channel. I like their channel. That's pretty much it, man. If you like something, support it. Buy their t-shirts, buy their comics, become a member. You know, if you don't like it, that's okay too.
And thank you guys for checking out this episode of the Iron Man Podcast. Remember, if you did not get a chance to watch the episode live, you can catch all of the episodes of the Iron Man Podcast and the Cloud 9 Podcast on the podcasting platforms as well. Like I mentioned before, at the time of doing this episode, I'm going to be having several videos coming out explaining the podcast schedule and a channel update regarding like what else I'm going to be doing in the future myself as well. Thank you guys for checking out the episode, and we'll see you guys later. Goodbye, everyone.